This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Friday was Trey Grayson's last day as president and CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. He took over leadership of the organization in July 2014. Before that, he was Kentucky's Secretary of State for two terms, and he served 3 years as director of Harvard University's Institute of Politics. Trey joins us this afternoon to discuss his career and his time at the Northern Kentucky Chamber. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon, Trey. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Mark.
Trey, what did you feel like this was the right time for you to make this move?
Well, our chamber has a rather unique fiscal year. We start September 1st and end at the end of August, which is why we always have our annual dinner in September. So we're right now starting the process of planning and doing budgeting and business planning for next year. And I thought it was a nice time because we'd filled some vacancies, and it allows Brent Cooper, who's going to be the interim for the next couple of months, who'd been the interim prior to me, he agreed to come back in, and he can do it for a couple of months and get somebody started and introduce them by the annual dinner. So the timing's kind of perfect, and after 3 years, I was ready for the next great opportunity for me. So the whole thought of things came together, and we decided it was a good time. We were joking off camera that while Friday was my last day in the office, I'm still helping out and was actually sending some emails back to the office of some things, including a membership lead for Lynn Ablin, our membership person.
That's going to go on for quite some time, though,
I'd imagine. Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
You still will actually have a role, though, with the chamber for a few months, an advisory type role,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so example of stuff that I'm doing and you know, questions that people have and trying to help out wherever I can. So yeah, I'm still helping out for a couple months.
Tell us about Brent Cooper, who's going to be the interim president until the replacement is found.
Brent is an entrepreneur in Northern Kentucky. About, I don't know, 15, 16, 20 years ago, he was one of the first people in Northern Kentucky to recognize the fact that more and more businesses needed help with IT. Rather than trying to do that in-house, especially with small businesses, they would hire somebody just like you would hire an accounting firm to help you out. And so he started an IT services company. It's been very successful, but he's also been a great community leader, especially when it comes to education. He loves the chamber, has gotten a lot of business over the years from the chamber. He's actually, like, you know, if you're going to put somebody on a poster and say, get involved with the chamber, Brent would be that guy because he's helped to make Northern Kentucky and his business better through his chamber involvement. So a couple years ago, when Steve Stevens, who'd been the president for a long time, decided he was ready to move on, Brent stepped up for a few months. I guess his business is good enough or he joked that they're better off without him anyway. And so now he's going to do it again. But Brent's an incredible cheerleader for Northern Kentucky, a champion for the chamber, and we're really fortunate to have him both in the chamber but also the region.
And he's the interim for now.
He's the interim for now. There's going to be a search. So if any listeners are want to apply, I think they're going to post it and hire a search firm here shortly. I don't think that's actually been done yet. But yeah, Brent does not want to be there longer than a few months.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. What's your best memory from being head of the chamber for 3 years?
Best memory? It's hard to pick one. Let me talk about just some of the highlights. I mean, I think one of the things that was a great memory was when I first got there, Chris Knockelman I started in July of 2014. Chris Knockelman, who's the current county judge executive, had won the primary for his race in 2014, and he didn't have an opponent in the fall. So he was going to be the winner, but he still wasn't exactly the judge executive yet. He wanted to fix the governance of the airport board. So he reached out to Adam Caswell, who was then our VP for Public Affairs, and me, and said, hey, would you help me put together a task force? We'll go out and recruit some community leaders from both sides of the river to talk about how we can improve the governance of CVG. We were staff, because he didn't have staff, because he was just the commissioner at that point. So we put the group together, came up with some ideas, worked with the legislators to come up with some good compromise language, and then went to Frankfurt and helped Chris get that thing done. And I'm not saying that's why Amazon and Southwest and everything is here, but you have a much better governed airport with more voices from all the counties, with appointments not just from the Kenton County Judge Executive. And that was fun, because that was right at the beginning. And it was I like Chris. We actually met through Leadership Northern Kentucky, which is a chamber program, back in 2000. But it's very unusual for an elected official to give up power for the community good like that. He did just that, and it was just fun right off the bat doing that. The other thing about that was people said, there's no way you can do this. There's no way you can get this passed, especially in the first year. Nothing happens in Frankfurt in the first year. And we got it done in the first year. Diane St. Ange, the state representative who actually represented the airport as part of her district. She sponsored the bill, and we worked closely with her and the LRC staff, and we got it done in the first year. Now, it's pretty extraordinary. You know, it would have been disappointing and might have been actually a real negative, a black eye, if you will, if we hadn't gotten it done. But we got it done in the first year, and that's one of my fondest memories because it just has a whole lot of things that came together all in one, and I think it was a big success.
It was interesting what you said about Frankfurt and the comments you got about nothing gets done in Frankfurt. How much—
In the first year.
In the first year. How much of a how much sway does Northern Kentucky have in Frankfurt, do you think, in terms of influencing policy and the directions of the state?
Historically, we haven't had a lot. I mean, let's face it, one of the challenges that Northern Kentucky has, and this isn't just about Frankfurt, you know, it's just we have this in general. We are often viewed by folks in other parts of Kentucky as being really part of Cincinnati. Cincinnati folks often view Northern Kentuckians as not being part of Cincinnati because we're in a different state. To me, I've loved growing up in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati because I always got the best of both worlds. I get Cincinnati and I get Northern Kentucky. I don't want to live in another part of Kentucky if I have my druthers. I'd rather live here and all the advantages of the arts organizations and the Major League Sports franchises and the restaurants and the food and the culture. But I live next to a horse farm by living in Northern Kentucky. And my house is a little bit cheaper, and I've got a great public school system, and I don't live that far from downtown, relatively speaking. And so I think it's the best of all worlds. That barrier, that psychological barrier, but also there's a little bit of a physical barrier. It's kind of hard to work in Northern Kentucky, live in Northern Kentucky and work in Frankfort. Louisville and Lexington are just enough closer that you see people commuting every day to Frankfort. It's hard. There are just a handful of folks who do that in a given gubernatorial administration, and almost nobody does it on a full-time basis. The result of that is we are just a little bit left out. Today, though, we're probably more influential in the legislature than we've been in a long, long time. I hate to say ever. You know, the state just is celebrating its 25th anniversary, so it's hard to say ever. But when the Republicans took over the House, and this isn't a partisan statement because you could say we have influence in a bad way, maybe from a Democratic standpoint, but from an objective standpoint, every single Northern Kentucky Republican now is a committee chair. Most of them are committee chairs during the regular session. A couple of them have oversight. So we now have the committee chair for the Health Committee, the Judiciary Committee, the Pension Oversight Committee, the Budget Review Committee on Transportation, Small Business and IT, you know, on and on and on. That's a lot of influence. There's going to be ability to shape legislation. There's going to be ability for us to get our voices in front of legislators, other legislators, in front of other parts of the state. And that's not been the case for a long time. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out. And hopefully we can use some of that influence to address some of our problems up here that are, you know, every community has its own unique set of issues, and we've got certainly our share. And those folks will be in the position to do that.
Well, what do you think were some of the other accomplishments during your time as head of the chamber?
One area that we made a dent in is in the area of workforce. When I first took over, one of the things that really was striking to me is I'd hear from people, you know, having trouble filling my jobs. You know, there's a talent gap. I've got positions open. There's people who need jobs. We can't find the matches, especially in the area of manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, where it now requires a little bit of training. You can't just show up with a strong work ethic and work in manufacturing like you used to. So we put together, along with Gateway, NKU, community colleges, Thomas More is even involved a little bit, other education providers, industry leaders, a coalition where we said, we got to solve this problem. Let's look at data. What are the jobs that we need in this sector? And let's figure out, do we have the right training programs in place? Out of that, Gateway created a certificate program called the Enhanced Operator, which they're now in the process of tweaking to make it even better. But it was very much, let's go to businesses and industry and say, what do you need? Let's try to make programs to fill that need, which is kind of a revolutionary way of doing it. I mean, to be honest, most education providers will say, this is the way we've done it, and this is the way it's going to be, and we'll graduate people. But Gateway rolled up its sleeves and worked really closely with manufacturing leaders to do that. So that coalition, that collaborative effort is something that's starting to be modeled across the state. We need to do that in other sectors like healthcare and IT, which are another couple's targeted sectors. But that collaborative approach to solving workforce has made some progress in our region. And that's something, you know, when I first started, I knew a little bit about workforce, but not a whole heck of a lot. And at the end, I felt like, yeah, I know a fair amount about this stuff now. Another example of how this plays out, the governor had this proposal about a year ago. So in the last legislative session, last budget session, the legislature, his recommendation, adopted a $100 million bond pool. to build projects, workforce projects across the state. But rather than saying we're going to build a bunch of buildings, they said we want this to be a partnership. We want an industry to sit down with a K-12 and a post-secondary and say, what is a job need, a workforce need that we have, and how are we going to start that pipeline in the K-12, and how are we going to prepare? For example, like, we need more nurses. We'll just pick one. You need more nurses. How are we going to get folks in high school more interested in that profession? What is the training that they need? What are the facilities that we need? And come together and show us the data that that's something that you specifically need. So we convened at the chamber a meeting because we heard about all this, and until you had all three partners, you were going to get rejected. There was no way to get the money. So we started hearing people, you know, I have a K-12 partner, but I don't have a post-secondary. Or I'm a post-secondary, but not an industry. So we started inviting people, and a meeting was going to be like 12 people. It ended up being 50. And we're like, look, we're not trying to pre-screen or prioritize. All of you are priorities, but let's just get together and figure out who's got ideas, who's missing pieces, and let's get things together. So there were two rounds of funding. And at the end of that, Northern Kentucky got more successful grants than any region in the state. We got some huge ones. The STEAM Academy that will leverage Toyota's gift out in Boone County. The home builders got a couple $1 million to address the building trades. But then there's some small ones. Free Store and Food Bank worked with some local schools on some logistics. Gateway got some money to do a mobile van. I mean, and Kenton County got some money, and then Brighton Center got some money. I mean, like, there are a whole bunch of them. You see all these dots on the map, and we have a whole bunch of dots. And that was really cool, knowing that we did that. And if we hadn't had that meeting, maybe all these partnerships wouldn't have been so successful.
We had a question from Tim in Georgetown. He wanted to ask, were you part of the Kentucky Governor's Scholar Program?
Yes, I was.
He wondered if you could comment on the impact that had on you in college and beyond.
Yeah, it's huge. I was a Governor's Scholar in 1989 at Center College, had an incredible experience. It impacted me. One, some of my closest friends still to this day are from that program. It also had a big impact on me, I believe, in my decision to stay home. You know, obviously as a local kid, my parents did a great job of helping me to appreciate the area, what this home meant. But going to GSP really helped connect me more broadly to the state of Kentucky and getting better connected, especially to Eastern Kentucky, because my mom's from Paducah, from far western Kentucky. So I'd spent some time out west, but had never really been to Eastern Kentucky, had never really been to South Central Kentucky. Meeting friends from all across the state, learning about the state, its opportunities and its challenges, all of that came together. And I was kind of inspired by many of the folks who spoke to us to come back after college, because I went away to college, to try to make a difference. And so when I did come back for grad school, I immediately got on the board. So I've been on the GSP board now for like 20 years. I'm now the vice chair. And this summer, I get to have my favorite role in GSP is I'm a GSP parent, or GS parent, I guess. My daughter's been having fun with all these acronyms with GSP, and you take some. So I'm a GS parent now. And so my daughter's starting at Murray State in a couple weeks, and she'll spend her 5 weeks. So that's a lot of fun.
How's a program like that help keep young talent in Kentucky? How's it do with that?
So there's a couple of ways. One, if you're picked by the program, and there's about 1,000 folks for those listeners, especially those in Ohio who maybe aren't as familiar with it, Governor's Scholars Program is a 5-week kind of pre-college curriculum. It's a combination of academics, extracurriculars, leadership, that sort of thing. A lot of the universities in Kentucky use this to say, all right, if you got picked to be GSP, you're a pretty solid student, so they automatically give scholarships. So there are millions of dollars in scholarships that are awarded to GSP students every summer. So if you're a Governor's Scholar, you can go to for free somewhere in Kentucky and almost every public school. UK has a little bit of a threshold with an ACT, but otherwise it's a full tuition at almost every school in Kentucky State. So that, if you stay in college in a state, studies show, and this isn't necessarily intuitive, you got to look at the data, but the data does show if you go to school in Kentucky, you're more likely to stay in Kentucky. So that's one thing. The second thing is by connecting you to your state. So whether it's speakers or friends, those relationships might cause you to stay in the state as well. So those are a couple of things. The legislature funds, I think it's about 2/3 of the tuition, and then the other third is private dollars. It's free to parents and to participate. So it's a really great program. It was life-changing for me, and every year since then it's been fun to give back to try to impact the lives of others.
So how did your time, you were Kentucky Secretary of State for, was it 7 years? Seven years and 1 month.
Yeah.
You also were director of Harvard's Institute for Politics. How did all this prepare you for the role you played with the chamber?
Well, there's a heavy external role for the chamber. I mean, you do run an organization, you manage employees and things like that. But the president of the chamber, by virtue of the chamber's importance in our community, represents Northern Kentucky in Cincinnati, across the state, and to some extent across the country. And so in both the IOP role, where I represented politics undergrads, you know, in Washington on campus and Boston and New York and everywhere else, and then as Secretary of State, you know, I'm used to giving out, giving speeches, having meetings. But that collaborative thing is the second thing. You know, I talked earlier about when you asked for some of the highlights. And you'll notice that basically everything I mentioned was kind of collaborating.
It was a collaboration of some type.
Yeah, because the chamber, when we've got 1,400 members of the chamber, staff of about 20, but we can't do it ourselves. We need to partner with other organizations. And so same thing as the Secretary of State. You've got one person in office. When I was there, it was about, I don't know, 35 or 40 people. I think it's a little smaller now. IOP would have staff of 20 and a couple hundred students. Those collaborative relationships, whether it was trying to get more students to go into politics or public service by working with other organizations on campus, or trying to improve elections by working with their county clerks across the state or other secretary of states across the country, or working on workforce challenges with providers and industry and our own members, putting those partnerships together, that collaboration was really key. So that's something I got pretty good at in those other positions, and it really prepared me for this job.
Can you talk to me about the Chamber's Women's Initiative?
Yeah, the Women's Initiative, I like to quote Pam Ustersaria, who was our former VP for Women's, and she always used to say, it's on fire, the Chamber's Women's Initiative is on fire. And it's true. The Women's Initiative was started, I don't know, close to 10 years ago by some of our women leaders who recognized the unfortunate reality that too often in Northern Kentucky was a bunch of guys running things. So they formed a series of programs to connect, grow, and achieve. So there's some networking components to it. There's a growth component, so there's a professional development component. And then there's an achievement of let's recognize outstanding women and let's try to, you know, if you connect and if you grow, then you will achieve. So it's sort of like an equation. So every month there's a networking reception, which is goes from place to place to place throughout Northern Kentucky. Last year, the Women's Initiative started a leadership summit that's a regional summit. So it's designed to draw folks from all across this part of the country, not just Northern Kentucky or Cincinnati. We had 300 people show up just out in the reputation of the Women's Initiative, which is pretty amazing. Had a great speaker. So this September is going to be the next one. We've got an out-of-town speaker coming in for an all-day thing, and I suspect the attendance will be even higher. The signature event, though, is a breakfast that takes place in January with about 700 attendees. That's actually co-ed, so I've been to that. I used to joke that I could report on what the Women's Initiative did, but I didn't often get to go to, you know, to things because I was not a woman. But it's great. It's very much member run, member engaged, and some of the founders, like Debbie Simpson, who was the chamber chair a couple years ago, and others have put together just a great series of programs. And Wanda Winkler from the Brighton Center is the current chair. But it's a great way. When we would sell memberships, it was something that a lot of companies would say, "Yeah, we know this is a great way to help our female employees out, so they can become better employees and better community leaders." And so it was something that that we often sold.
What do you see as the challenges and the opportunities ahead for the Northern Kentucky Chamber?
I think one of the challenges we have for the chamber, but also for the community as a whole, is we've grown a lot. Most people, I'm sure most listeners don't realize that there are more people who live in Kenton, Boone, and Campbell counties than live in the city of Cincinnati. It's close to 450,000 people. So that's a lot bigger, actually, than the city of Cincinnati. It's also bigger than the city of Lexington. So now if you include the surrounding counties of Lexington, Metro Lexington would be bigger. But Northern Kentucky, Kenton, Boone, and Campbell has more people than Lexington, Fayette County. So it's gotten really big over the last couple of decades. And with that bigness, we've lost some of the connections. You know, people in parts of Northern Kentucky focus a little bit more on their own little areas of the county just because there's just more to do. There's more people to get to know. There's schools. We used to all be in the ninth region when it came to high school sports. That's not been the case now for, you know, I graduated in 1990. So sometime in the 90s, we got split up. And now they're spread among three different regions. The ninth is still all Northern Kentucky, but there's some in the eighth and the tenth. And that's a little thing, but that means you're not traveling as much to play other schools and sports or academic competitions or band competitions. So we've gotten bigger, but one of the challenges, we're still just a neighborhood of Cincinnati. So when you get big, sometimes you get the advantages of big. You get large institutions that write big checks and send their volunteers out. We don't have that as much. So I think one of the things that we have to grapple with as a community is how do we adjust? You know, Lexington, like I said, is about our size. But that's just Lexington, and they have one behemoth institution, the University of Kentucky, that really dominates everything there. We don't have that behemoth institution. We don't have a lot of large institutions. Our banks tend to be headquartered in Cincinnati, for example.
And when you say we're still just a neighborhood of Cincinnati, you mean there's a perception?
Well, just the reality is we're part of Cincinnati. We're 20% of a metro area. So radio, television, newspapers were kind of a small part of that big, you know, there aren't the economies of scale. There's no single television station that really focuses on Northern Kentucky or radio. I mean, I appreciate that all that you all do with this, with Cincinnati Edition and highlighting things in Northern Kentucky. You do a great job of that. But one of the things I used to tell people when I was Secretary of State of Kentucky, on election day, all day long, I would do calls and interviews across the state. And they were simple things. It was basically, I would get on, talk for a couple minutes about what we were hearing, with the whole point of saying, don't forget, if you're in line at 6 o'clock, you can still vote. You know, it was basically a reminder, and they were helping us with a little bit of public service. We tried to do it and make it more colorful, more interesting. I never once got asked by a single Clear Channel, Cumulus, or any other radio station in Northern Kentucky to chime in and do a happy election day, ever. I never was interviewed, but never on TV stations or anything like that, except when I ran for the United States Senate. Then I was on TV some. Then I was on the radio some. But the regular radio and TV just didn't care about Kentucky. And you look at their coverage, we don't get 20% of the coverage on those networks. And it's odd because a lot of the people who are reading the news are actually Northern Kentucky residents. I'm not going to go in and name names, but a lot of those news anchors you see on TV are from Northern Kentucky, and you never hear Frankfort news.
And those are the challenges.
Yeah.
What do you think is the opportunity for the chamber going forward?
Well, we've always had this challenge, right? We've always been in Kentucky, and then, you know, we've always been part of Cincinnati and part of Kentucky. And I remember our pastor a couple years ago, Dave Heidrich, said, you know, there's sort of been this unease, and we kind of like it that way. We kind of like it that it's our own thing. You know, we can kind of figure that out. So we're you know, we can do that.
So the challenge is, the opportunity here is to bridge that gap.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I also think one of the great opportunities is Northern Kentucky University. It's a newish institution when it comes to higher ed. When my dad graduated from Covington Catholic in the early 60s, it didn't exist. It was cheaper for him to go live on campus at UK or live in an apartment in Lexington than go to UC or Xavier and live at home, because of the tuition and everything. So NKU has changed that, and it can probably be the organizing institution in this, even though it's sports, the basketball team. You could start to see the pride in our region, no matter whether you had an affiliation with the school or not, when they qualify for the tournament. And plus, so many of us have something to do with the school. You know, my daughter's at camp there next week. So that, I think NKU can be a really big deal for our community.
Real quickly, what's next for you?
I don't know. Anybody hiring?
Any thoughts of politics?
I'm not running for Congress next year, so okay. There's that. No, I might be around politics or government, but it's going to be fun to explore all this. I'm really excited about it.
Trey, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks. Enjoyed it, too.
Trey Grayson, who served his last day as president and CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber on Friday.